This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is BFM 89.9, the business station. Good afternoon and welcome to Enterprise Explores. This is the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line. 12:05 here in the studio, coming up to 12:06. And it is still 8th of March. Of course, it is still International Women's Day, a global observance that aims to raise awareness about gender equality, women's rights, and the achievements of women worldwide. In the dynamic landscape of entrepreneurship, empowering women entrepreneurs has emerged as a critical avenue for fostering economic growth, innovation, and social change. Across the globe, women entrepreneurs are breaking barriers, creating jobs, contributing significantly to their economies, yet they continue to face unique challenges. These include limited access to capital, gender biases in the business world, and a lack of support networks and mentorship opportunities. Addressing these challenges and unlocking the full potential of women in entrepreneurship is not just a matter of gender equity, but also a vital component of global economic development and innovation. In Malaysia, organizations like the National Association of Women Entrepreneurs of Malaysia and accelerators like Leet Ventures plays a pivotal role in supporting and nurturing female-led startups. I'm going to be speaking with Anusha Krishnan, ex-co-member of the National Association of Women Entrepreneurs of Malaysia and founder of Migite, and Bikesh Lakmichand, the founder of Leet Ventures, on the initiatives that are in place to help improve access to funding, provide mentorship, and fostering a more inclusive and supportive ecosystem to level the playing field for women. Guys, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having
us.
Anu, how are you today?
I'm very good, thank you.
It's not your first time on radio, I understand, but first time here in this studio in particular.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
Bikesh, you are no stranger here, are you today?
No stranger, and hello, dear wife. Happy International Women's Day, Linda.
There you go. Can I start with you, Anu? Uh-huh. How do you see women entrepreneurs contributing to Malaysia's economy and society at large? And what's the current landscape like?
Well, I think, I did some homework, I think, before, just to make sure I got the right numbers. Interestingly, there are hardly any numbers. Yeah, so it's always old numbers. I think the most accurate one was in 2015, but you know, there were some that were published. So if we take the business landscape, there are about 1.17 million MSMEs. That means micro and small companies, right? Out of that, about 20.8% are supposed to be women entrepreneurs. So if you take the landscape, translates to about 200,000 companies. Now, we don't know what's the actual breakdown, how many of them are micros, but estimates usually put the number of micros to be the bigger percentage of those businesses, because this encapsulates both the sole proprietorships plus the private limited companies. Yeah. So that's the landscape. Now, if you ask me, you know, what's the contribution? Fundamentally, a business person does one thing very well. They create jobs, right? So again, data says that about, for women, it's about 2.5, average about 2.5 jobs, right? So if you take the 200,000 that I was telling you about, you're talking about roughly about 500,000 jobs created by Malaysian women entrepreneurs. Yeah, I'm very proud of that, to say that, yes, I'm one of the numbers that, you know, subscribe to this 500,000. And in terms of our contribution to GDP, that's the second thing. Yeah, again, no numbers, just estimates. The MSMEs contribute about 38% to the GDP of the country. Now, if you take about 20.8%, and you know, we just do a back of the napkin kind of calculation, that really that translates to about 6.5% contribution to the GDP currently by women entrepreneurs.
Yeah. What have you got to say about that then, Bikesh?
I concur. I concur. I mean, I'm just thinking about my numbers from what we see from this high-tech startup sector. So in 2023, I think we invested in about 10 companies. Mm. And so happened that 50% of that was female-run startups.
Right.
And if you talk about their contribution compared to male counterparts, I think that is something that we see different. The women-led startup seems to have a more social, give-back, reinvest kind of gender versus the male counterparts. So I think from a whole bigger picture, you talk about female ran companies, MSMEs throughout the nation, you have hundreds and thousands of them. I think they will definitely make a huge impact back to GDP, trying to get equal, you know, pay. I think if a female-led startup would basically ensure pay is equal from the beginning, it's at the get-go. So huge, huge spillover effects by women leading these particular roles itself.
I've got a question for you a little bit later on about women who start business, who receive VC funding and what the percentage of that is, because we had a bit of a question about that in one of our earlier sessions today.
Sure.
I'll pick you up on that a little bit later on. Back to you, though, Anu. From your perspective, what do you think are some of the unique challenges that women and opportunities that women face in various different sectors in Malaysia? And what sectors are there? Are there sectors that they face more challenges than others, would you say?
I think the first thing, I mean, I know you mentioned unique, but, you know, fundamentally, any person in business, entrepreneur, whether male or female, the first thing that we will always face challenge with is funding, right?
Yes.
So women...
Big cash, in this thing.
So, yes, there's no magic to that, right?
I think in Malaysia, everyone has issue with funding, regardless of gender.
Okay, yeah. So, I think that's a global phenomenon. It's not
just
in
Malaysia mostly. Yeah.
Okay. So given that, I think for women in particular, there are two things, not necessarily from a challenge point of view. I'm going to speak from my perspective. Women are inherently uncomfortable with borrowing money. We are very risk averse in that sense, right? So if a woman wants to borrow money, it's usually when she is in a very low state. I mean, then her funds might have dried out and she's desperate for money. So now the problem though is if you look at funders, they only give you an umbrella when it's not raining. So it's actually the best time to borrow money is when your business is doing very well. And that's advice that the bankers will give you. Like, for instance, now you have just gone through Chinese New Year, then we have Hari Raya coming up, so sales will be very good. So their suggestion is when business is very good, go and get some money. Because at the end of the day, at least you create yourself a sort of a nest egg when you need it.
So you have that nice buffer.
That's right, yeah. Yes. And business, you do need a buffer because, you know, obviously you want to expand, you want to innovate and do things like that. So that's one challenge. The second challenge, I think, is very much related to high-tech industries because women traditionally tend to be more in service-oriented industries like, you know, education, healthcare, retail, right? So we are not so much into construction, manufacturing, or high-tech, for instance. So one of our members, for instance, she's in a very high-tech industry and she is really expanding. And she has mentioned that when she goes for VC funding, she's always perceived as being high risk because one additional factor is because she's a woman. So I think that's one of the biases that we actually face in terms of getting access to funding. And you know, the other unique problem that women would have is they call it the imposter syndrome. I believe that, you know, that's where we think that, oh, maybe I don't deserve this. Am I fake? People figure out that I'm actually, you know, making all of this up as I go along. So those are things that, you know, traditionally become real challenges for women. Yeah.
Okay. Before we move on to a break, Bikesh, a chance to kind of come back at some of those things there.
I think in the deep tech sector, definitely. So we heard it firsthand from our startups. So in the tech, high tech sector, they always get the PR spill of like, oh, wow, female built a satellite. Every minister wants to take a photo with her. When it comes to like, can I get a grant? You know, how about that? And then it's just like crickets. So you're listening there, please respond back to her. Yeah. So that's always been the opportunity. So I concur with what she said.
So earlier on today, before we go into a break, and you just mentioned it there, Anu, as well, about access to funds, particularly from VCs. And the lady earlier on said it was 99% of companies that go for funding, if they're male-led, will likely get funding, you know. Just 1% of women here in Malaysia will receive funding from VCs.
Yeah.
It's not much better in the UK either. That's at 2%. Can you kind of address that, Bikesh? And perhaps, is there a perceived extra risk for women when it comes to be careful how you answer.
Yeah. So there's two parts here, right? One is there is not enough female-run businesses in the high-tech sector for VCs to be interested in.
Right.
Right? So that's why the stats are low. If right. there was a lot, then there's a higher chance.
Yeah.
So like on our side, we funded 50-50, 50% male, 50% female last year. We tried to think whether, you know, do we had a bias towards this? How do we kind of get out of this bias? So can you have the conscious mindset of investing? So great point you brought up earlier saying women don't like to borrow money. But also, if you look at what Grameen was based on, he was saying the best people to lend money to is females.
Yeah.
Because they will want to pay it back. And then we see that also in our portfolios, right? Mm. Female founders that we invest into will ensure that they try and make sure that, you know, nothing goes wrong. If something goes wrong, we've even seen the case that they'll try and figure out to return back the money or saying, I'm going to build something else, I'm going to transfer your equity owner. No boy has ever done that for me, mm-hmm. right? So I think that specific case has led to females now trying to get access to funding, and there have been female-led VCs who want to invest into this. But just the sheer numbers, we don't have enough female founders running tech companies for VCs to invest into. That could shift the odds. Would they be less likelihood of receiving funds? Some people tell us possibly. The line of questioning they get from VCs is very different from a female to a male-led. Mm. Male ones you see talk about growth. Female ones talk about what's restricting you and what's going to hold you back. Mm. Your plans for the future, implying like she's going to get married, she's going to have kids.
Right.
How do you handle all those things? So they tend to get those additional questions, which should not be right.
Right. Okay, we need to take a short break here. Folks, of course, you're listening to Enterprise Explores. It is the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business. From the headlines to the bottom line, we're delving into the initiatives that are in place to help improve access to funding, provide mentorship, fostering a few more inclusive and supportive ecosystems. We'll get to all of this stuff a little bit later on. That's going to help level the playing field for women. I'm with Anusha Krishnan, ex-co member with the National Association of Women Entrepreneurs of Malaysia, and Bikesh, of course, the founder of Leet Ventures. We'll be right back after these messages here on BFM 89.9.
Baba from Malacca. BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, the business station. I'm Rich Bradbury, and welcome back to Enterprise Explores. We're discussing initiatives and some other stuff that are in place to help improve access to funding, Bikesh, providing mentorship and fostering a more inclusive and supportive ecosystem to level the playing field for women. I'm here with Anusha Krishnan, the ex-co member with the National Association of Women Entrepreneurs of Malaysia, and of course, Bikesh Lakmishand, the founder of Leet Ventures. I suppose one thing I do want to speak about, and we've heard a little bit about this earlier on today, is the role of networking and mentorship. And both of you will be heavily involved in this as well. How important is networking first and mentorship for women entrepreneurs? And how can these networks be more effectively built and leveraged, I think? Anu, let's start with you.
I think the fundamental for any business person, like if I were to take my background, for example, I did my university degree. I come from a professional background, and then I start my business. Mm. Now, that means I know very little about business, right? So the best way for me to learn about business is to have a mentor. Yes, someone who is experienced, because there's nothing like an experienced person telling you how you need to manage your accounts, what you need to do from, you know, making sure that you don't run into issues. And if we do have an issue, if I do have an issue, then my best bud is my mentor. Because then I will go and tell her, okay, look, this is the situation. What should I do now? And seriously, NAWEM has been a great help for me in that sense, yeah? Because there are women who have very successfully sold their businesses and so forth. So that kind of mentoring and that kind of friendship is what will be very useful, because you also need to build some kind of relationship with your mentor. And, you know, When we discuss things, we really need to be vulnerable, and we need to be very open about what is the issue. And, you know, some of it can be a personal issue. Some of it can be my lack of maybe fiduciary, safety nets and things like that. So I think that's where mentoring is extremely important. Mm. And I think that's where I would suggest that having being part of an association, I mean, whichever association that you're most comfortable with, not just one, actually, to have a few, because you may need mentors in a few areas. You may need mentor for finance, you may need mentor for marketing and so forth. So it's always a good thing that when you get into business that you actually, think very seriously and make sure that you join one, at least one or more than one, network. Mm. Yeah, so.
Yeah, I think that's a key thing for us in the accelerator venture capital world, right? It's always about, can someone show you how to avoid the brick walls ahead of you?
Yeah.
So we're currently running our female-only accelerator program. We have 38 amazing companies, female-led, startups, SMEs, anyone that has a digital footprint of a business itself. So running this program, we kind of thought to ourselves, like, how do we mentor? Do we just mentor a la carte the exact way we usually do, or do we do it differently? So we took it on ourselves to kind of make that the mentors also play a role as role models. Mm-hmm. So whoever would bring, let's say, talk about growth hacking, talk about channel partner management, or just better operations internally, we went to sort out female founders that were excelling in those things and get them to also be a mentor, mm-hmm. as a peer. They find that question answering sessions, I got lesser questions, but the female mentors and role models got way more questions. They tend to open up more to such counterparts.
That's what I was going to ask. Yeah. Does it make a difference if your mentor is male or female? Did it for you, Anu?
I would say probably not, because I think that if I can, if I had someone who is male and, you know, I have affinity, or, you know, I'm able to build a relationship, I don't think that would be, not at all.
We saw it from the early point of basically trying to just be vulnerable and ask questions that you think like, oh, should I be asking this? They tend to have been more open to ask such questions. So we observe the other side of it itself. Mm-hmm. So that was something that was our hypothesis, that did you need to have special programs? Did you need to have female-only mentors? Mm-hmm. I think to a degree, yes, you do need to have some of those things. But eventually, once they get out of their shell, they know what it takes to basically start a business. They got all these role models. Then they can go about it and saying, all right, I know what to do next, and I'll find my next evolution of mentors, be it whatever gender that is. Mm. But the stepping stone to get there, I think it was helpful to have that safe space, because some of them also talked about, like, you're still young. You haven't got to the crossroads of you getting married. You're going to have a kid. You're going to have this pressure. Mm. How would you handle it? They kind of set that real world situation for them to know what you're getting into, to basically, you know, put it all on the table itself. Mm.
Right.
Mm. Now, Anu, what policies or initiatives have been most effective in supporting women entrepreneurs in the country?
You rightly mentioned mentoring as one of the programs that we tend to do is for our members. We run a lot of training programs. And from the onset, what we have actually done is we've incorporated coaching and mentoring as part of all our programs. So one of the programs that we had, which, you know, Vikesh has actually mentioned, is actually to have something called a success teams. Mm. It's something like a facilitated coaching or mentoring circle, where you would have an experienced mentor and you would have a group of younger entrepreneurs who will then discuss issues. So each person will have an opportunity to share their issue, and the group will basically try and find answers for you. So that's been very effective. So this was done some years ago. We are actually planning to revive this program and start it again in 2024. So that's one. The other is actually networking opportunities. And that's one of the reasons why I would say it's good to have mentors from both, male and female mentors, because your female mentor can help you maybe in terms of what Vikesh said, to sort of help you understand what you would go through, you know, from a family perspective, your responsibilities as a daughter, as a mother, as a wife, and so forth. Whereas I think from a networking perspective, or from a sales marketing perspective, I would think that perhaps a male mentor will be, you know, more helpful for me, because, you know, they would have maybe a network of people, especially if you're talking about tech companies, yeah. So perhaps that's also something that, you know, the networking you have to be. So we try and open, create those kind of opportunities. We also have been fortunate because we are a 30-year-old organization. We're actually invited to be consultants to advise on by Ministry of Finance, Bank Negara, and so forth, in terms of some of the programs. So we actually, what we do is some of our newer, younger participants, we actually try and bring them into those kind of conversations as well. Yeah.
Interesting stuff. Mm-hmm. How do you think cultural and social norms here, in particular in Malaysia, kind of impact women entrepreneurship? And what strategies have proven successful in getting around some of these challenges?
I think if you take the old school mindset. Like, let me explain from my friend's perspective. Now, she went into engineering, right? But her mother's in particular was very uncomfortable, because if you go into something like hard science, you know, hard tech, you won't get married.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, so, right.
No, seriously. Wow. Seriously, that is very big. It's very, very big part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because, you know, if you're going to climb poles, if you're climbing a telecom pole and so forth, you know, you look like a tomboy, and of course, you know, you're not attractive as a woman. So those are some of the cultural norms that we have. And of course, you know, the whole conversation that, you know, once you're a woman, you're a businesswoman, you do not exclude your family. It's part and parcel of this whole thing, right? So whatever business you're doing, you will still have your family, you'll have your children, you'll have your, you know, parents, whatever. So that, I think from a VC perspective, I think what Bikesh said earlier, I can imagine that will be perhaps one of the things that they would think, that, you know, it's a risk factor. What happens if you get married? Would your husband say, okay, look, you can't work. Let me be the sole breadwinner of the family. So I think those are some of the issues that, you know, social norms that you will have to, contend with. Yeah. Mm. So I think that very, very well put is to have role models who have navigated. And I would also like to share this with you, which I think is very, very important for women to hear. All the successful women that I know of in NAWEM never excluded the family. It was all part and parcel of the whole thing. That means they managed everything. They decided that, look, this is going to be part of my life. Yeah, as a businesswoman, doesn't mean that I don't look after my family. No, the extended family, the children, the husbands, everything. So, like one of my friends, she is running the business with her husband and her son, and she cooks lunch for them. Right. So it's not an option. It is. Yes, this is my whole, whatever it is that I've subscribed to. And I'm going to make sure that it's all run smoothly. Mm. So that's great.
Bikesh, societal and cultural norms in.
So, of course, we're looking more at the younger new age ones. So yeah, I think they've thrown all that out of the window. That's why we see a female founder come and saying, I want to build satellites. Mm. And she hired SpaceX to launch a satellite. And she can, right? So I think that whole shift is happening. But, you know, the VC world, they've always said, is male-dominated. Even if you see there is a female counterpart in a VC, you tend to see she behaves more like the male counterpart rather than female. In fact, sometimes they make it even harder because they think that I can't be on your side. I have to push you even further. So that happens. So I think, you know, the things has to change. Until I don't get questions at events I speak to saying, how should girls pitch? If I don't hear that anymore, then I think we're all right. But now the fact that you still think that girls should pitch differently their solutions, that is so wrong. It's like saying, throwing like a girl. There's a whole campaign about that last time, right? Mm. So I think that shift should happen more on the funder side and all. Like, how do you evaluate a great idea, a great executioner? And it should just be that.
It shouldn't be whether it's a woman pitching it or a man pitching it. It's just a good idea or it's not.
Exactly.
Right. Folks, we do have some more time. If you want to get in touch and ask questions of these two here in the studio, of course, I've got Anusha Krishnan, ex-co-member with the National Association of Women Entrepreneurs of Malaysia, and Bikesh Lakmichan, the founder of Leet Ventures. Get us on our U-Mobile WhatsApp number, 0187 789 8899. Get us on X. We are at BFM Radio. This is Enterprise Explores, the show where we help you navigate the ever-changing universe of business from the headlines to the bottom line, of course, on International Women's Day here on BFM 89.9.
Birkins for Mama. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
BFM 89.9, The Business Station. Welcome back to Enterprise Explores. I'm here in the studio with Anusha Krishnan, ex-co-member of the National Association of Women Entrepreneurs of Malaysia, and Bikesh Lakmichan, the founder of Leet Ventures. We've been speaking about a whole bunch of stuff, but Bikesh, I want to talk to you about innovation and technology as equalizers, and how tech and social media in particular can serve as an equalizer for women entrepreneurs in the startup ecosystem.
Yeah, I think it's never been easier, well, cliched sentence, to launch a digital company. What more in the space leveraging high-tech stuff like AI?
Yeah.
That you don't have to go build that LLM model, but you could say, ChatGPT is available, GPT is there. I could take whatever I know from an industry like healthcare, build on top of that, and curate an interesting new application on top of that. So I think it's available to everyone, not just females. So I think this is where the opportunity should be grasped by everyone to basically have that know-how and to know how to build companies that matter on that front itself. So if you look at the current accelerator we have, though, we still see a tendency for females to maybe not venture so much into high tech. We have 38 companies. I would say maybe 5 or 6 of them would be more on the cutting-edge digital side, ready for venture capital funding. The rest of them, on choice, just wants to build a lifestyle business. Just wants a business that's enough for me to make an income, I can support my family and be okay. There's not wrong about that. So from that standpoint, still we teach them leverage technology, right? Why do things that's not scalable? If you could scale, here are tools you could basically leverage. So it's about the education component and all those things available. And eventually also education from accessing capital. So you won't go to venture capital, but where would you go to raise capital for this? Because the last person you go to is a bank, because you need to have money to get money from a bank. So then alternative financing, what's available? Angels, P2P, ECF. So that all is accessible now with the whole larger innovation agenda.
Anything to add to that?
I think I liked what you mentioned earlier about having or focusing on companies that are impact-driven, rather outcome-driven, rather than tech. Because in many ways, tech is a tool. It's not the end game, right? So if I'm focusing on creating a sustainable business, or if I'm focusing on something that will, you know, be a social innovation and things like that, then tech is a tool. Tech is not the end game, right? So if the women were to be very driven by purpose driven, right? So if I want to say I want to save, or I want to create something which will help women in business, maybe understand or be able to, do their business planning or whatever much better, then tech can be a tool. Honestly, that's something that I'm very passionate about, because I think tech is a tool. It's not the end of the game. So if you need to learn how to use it well in whatever businesses that you're in, and even if you take e-commerce business and so forth, the foundation is tech, but the business is still traditional business. You're moving from a retail business to an online business.
Yeah, so
right?
You need to understand the new behaviors of customers, where customers are, how do you access the customers.
Right.
So in that, there's still some new things to basically learn, right? So that whole shift happened post-COVID, where VCs were funding growth. Everybody put a pause on that, and now it's saying, let's make sure our companies have some kind of substance to be in the black. Tie it in with purpose-driven. I think this is where female-founded companies could basically strive, where we try and pause and saying, I want a company that has tremendous outcome, that's scalable, because eventually it's going to go big. It could be a listed co, right? It just doesn't run at that pace and growth and have that kind of burning cash, and it goes back to the fundamentals itself. So that shift we start seeing happening. Again, doesn't have to be funded by a venture capital always. That's where angel investors and the other instruments comes in, and everyone still stands to gain.
We've spoken about this in the past, about how things paused, that type of investment has paused. Are we now seeing that more companies look towards social impact and sustainability then?
I think that's the buzzword today, right? Sustainability, ESGs, what does it mean? But it just means a purpose, right? I mean, the fundamentals of every company should have a purpose. Because if you can't tell me the why you're running something, be it a tech company or a bakery, why should I come and buy from you? It's like I could buy apples from everywhere. But if you tell me your apples come from a smallholder farmer where you sell this apple, part of the proceeds puts their kids to school, goes back to the community for the other kids to go to school, I'm going to go buy apples from that person. But it's just selling apples. But the value on top of that apples is so tremendous.
Okay, I have one more question before I let you go, just to wrap up with. And it's about future outlook and advice. When you, Anu, let's start with you. Your outlook of the future of women entrepreneurs in Malaysia, particularly when it comes to let's forget about that. Just the future of women entrepreneurship. What advice would you give to aspiring women entrepreneurs? And I know that sounds like a very broad, very cliche question on International Women's Day, but I think it's a question that we should ask.
I think that that there are many women who have been successful in Malaysia. So there are plenty of role models. And I think that the best thing about entrepreneurship is it really allows you to to decide what you want to do and make that happen. Mm. Yeah. So I would highly encourage everyone to think outside the box. And, you know, a safe space is to work for somebody else. But today we don't consider that safe anymore. I think the pandemic taught us a big lesson, right? There is no such thing as safety. So if you want to create something that you decide how it should grow and what where it should be and what impact you want, then the best path to take is build your own business. Mm. And then you can decide where it goes. And, you know, just to add on, maybe Vikesh, one of the things I was just thinking about is if women want to start a business and they need tech as one of the enablers, then perhaps there could be an opportunity where they could have mentors who can help them specifically in trying to figure that out. So if that's the case, then the world is the oyster, right? You can go ahead and decide, what do I want to do? And, you know, what are the opportunities? Like the care economy is a big thing, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the care economy is something that is very close to a woman's heart. So why not take that? And even on the ESG front, if you look at it, a lot of focus on environment. What about social? I think that's going to be picking up pretty soon. So instead of always looking at how you can help in terms of the, you know, the carbon capture and those kind of initiatives, women have a very big place to play in terms of social, you know, in the ESG context, right? Mm. So that's something that women can take, you know, big step or big handle into that those kind of areas. Yeah. Mm. So, yeah. Thank you.
One for you, Bakesh.
From an opportunity, future outlook, advice, I think that what you mentioned, I know earlier, imposter syndrome, I think that's a key thing. Mm. So the whole thing about having role models and not worrying about failure, I think that's something to overcome. But the only way you can overcome is if you just start. There's so many programs out there. Our programs are online. It's always free. You never pay for such programs, nor should you ever pay for such programs. Just, you know, dip your toe in there and give it a try. There's so many amazing female founders that are in the market today that are willing to talk to you and help you out. All you have to do is ask. And that's something that we try to prove with the current programs we run. So I look forward to hearing your pitch. So if you have a great idea and you're listening, drop me a message. I'm always here to basically listen to amazing ideas in this country.
And for those people that are listening and do want to pitch at you, where could they find out more information?
So everything's on our website, 1337.ventures. We have a pitch button right at the top right corner. Click on it, fill up the form, and an analyst will call you. And we do that every Tuesday. We listen to ideas.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Folks, I've been speaking with Anusha Krishnan, the ex-co member of the National Association of Women Entrepreneurs of Malaysia, and Bikesh, of course, the founder of Elite Ventures, 1337 as well. If you missed any part of this conversation, you can catch the podcast on our website at bfm.my or download the BFM app. You can also find our shows on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and other podcast players. Just search for Enterprise Explores. My name is Rich Bradbury here on BFM 89.9, the business station.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.